Desire your prayers this afternoon. Been thinking about a subject recently of track record. You know how valuable a track record is? The most valuable one is God's track record. Because what the devil would love to do is contest it, come against us at times and make us think, you know what, God really hasn't done anything for us, because we're facing up with this big battle right here now. But for us to be able to go back and look at the past and the track record there is, I'd like to start with us looking at some temporal things and the track record, the value of a track record. Track record helps you to either build confidence in something or have no confidence in it. So I'm interested. Over the past years, our political system's track record, has it built confidence? You kind of lose confidence. You kind of say, what could happen next? I would hate to be selling an item with a warranty no more than what our political system can give us. And I was thinking about temporal things. For years, Sears put out a product, a tool. They said it's a Craftsman product. And it had a track record. You didn't have to jump through any hoops to swap it in. If there is any of our tools don't perform like you think it should, you bring it back. No questions asked. Now that's a track record right there. Why? Do they say, you know what, we have inferior tools, but we have bunches of them, so we'll just give them another one just like it? No. What they had was a confidence in what they were building, that should you have a failure, it's a very slim chance of that happening, and we will replace it. Because I've had some other times where I get a product and it says this has a lifetime warranty, and it fails. And so I call them up and I say, what do I need to do to get this replaced? They said, okay, you must mail to us the original receipt. We will not take a copy. You know what that means? You get a one-time chance. If the mail doesn't make it or if they say they didn't get it. And the times that I've done that, I don't think I've had success once. I might as well go ahead and throw it in the trash, because there's a reason they say, you've got to do this just right. We can't see that this is a photocopy. This has got to be an original. That means when I sent it in and I didn't get a reply and I call them up and they said, yeah, you need to send the original. I said, I just did. There is no other original. So it's all over with. You know, those kind of things, it is so nice to see a company that says, we have a warranty. We have a lifetime warranty on this product. You know what your next question ought to be? How long you been in business? Because it's one thing if somebody tells me, I put a lifetime warranty on this product here, and then you look over the door and it says, we've been in business now for 9 months. Well, you know what? That warranty only means it's as good only as long as that business stays in. That business gone, and you might as well not try to send it to anybody. That's how it works in the world. But I'm thinking about God's track record. Folks, I tell you, He's got a track record that we can count on. And I am very thankful for it. You know, in the world sometimes, maybe they had to pay a lot of money for a one-minute ad. But I would notice the first 55 seconds, you could clearly tell they're extolling the benefits of this product. But then they had another 55 seconds worth of something that they were trying to tell me, and they had to squeeze it in 5 seconds. You remember it? Sounded like a chipmunk, just so speedy. And you're trying to, well, what are they trying to say here? And you catch just enough words that it says, maybe this thing is going to be all that we said it's going to be. You know, that's not the way with God's track record. I like to look at a few verses, because we're in a time now where it seems like, I believe through this meeting, there have been more serious requests for people in need, physical needs. And you know those physical needs the devil would love to come along and help us, cause us to forget God's track record. Yes. Folks, he's got a track record that extends all back through time.
Yes. Amen.
He speaks the same speed all the way through. There are no, this is a good thing, but at the end, I can't understand what, except I know that they must not have much confidence in their product, not with God. And I look at some verses, I'd like to look at a couple of them. In 2 Corinthians, because I think it's important for me, all the promises, 2 Corinthians 1 and 20, all the promises. You know, we've heard some promises this week that God has. In fact, I think whenever I check, there's somewhere over 8,000 promises in the Bible. And this says all of them. All the promises of God in him are yea, and in him amen, to the glory of God by us. You know, we have another promise that says it is impossible for God to lie. Whatever he says, no matter how the world says, I don't understand it, I don't see how it could work that way, it's impossible for God to lie. And there's in Hebrews, the 13th chapter, 13 and 8. Jesus Christ, very small verse here, but it is a track record. Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. You know, we sing that song, Great is Thy Faithfulness. Part of that song says, as thou hast been, thou forever shalt be. A confidence in this God and the promises that he makes to us. Those promises are yea and amen. It says, I am the Lord, I change not. You know, we have a song that says, change and decay. Have we ever seen changes in our world in the last few years? Change and decay in all around I see. O thou who changest not, abide with me. Talk about a track record that we can have, each one of us can have, because Satan is out to destroy our faith in God. And it's nothing new. I thought about when the three Hebrew stood before the king Nebuchadnezzar, and he told them what was about to happen to him, to them. And then he ended it with, and who is that God who is able to deliver you? You know, he didn't recognize the track record that God had. You know, Nebuchadnezzar was the one that also went through some schooling that God had for him. And at the end of it, Nebuchadnezzar was the one that says, I praise and extol and I honor this God of heaven. You know what? I believe he was starting to build something with God himself at that time. But you remember with them, he had no confidence in God. The king did not. We're living in a time where the world around us does not understand who God is, the track record that he has had. And they're not going to give us much support in trusting God. But I'm thinking of the places, O thou who changest not. Lord, I want you to abide with me through this time that we're going through. Because there are places in the scripture. You remember in 2 Kings, in the 6th chapter, we read about Elisha and how God worked with him. That is quite a story. The king of Syria is planning to do battle, and he picks the place that he plans to attack. And when he goes there, the Israelites have it fortified. Not just once, but more than once. To the point that then he starts realizing, you know what, I've got a spy in my camp here that's telling what's going on. You know, it's amazing what the king of Syria's troops told him. When he asked, who is it among us that is telling this? they had an understanding of God's track record. So there's a man over in Dothan, and he is being told what you're talking about in your bedchamber. And he's able to go and tell what's going to be happening next. And you remember what happened at that time? Well, there's no need to plan another battle until we take care of this problem. So they surrounded Dothan to catch Elisha. You know, we can look at a problem and see how big the problem is, or we can look at a problem and see how big God is. The servant stepped outside the next morning, and you know, he wasn't daydreaming. The city was surrounded. And he steps back in and he asks Elisha, what are we going to do? You know, there's no escape for us here. You know, it's easy for me, for us, in times of trouble, that's what the devil would like to bring to us. There's no escape from this one. This one is, you're surrounded with trouble here. But instead, Elisha could see the same amount of people out there. But he had a vision on something else. It said, he asked the Lord, Lord, would you open my servant's eyes? And you know, then when he looked, nothing had changed as far as the enemy. But he was able to see that it was also surrounded by chariots of fire. God's help for them there. And I believe nothing has changed for us today. Yes, we have troubles that come into our life. The world will take a look at it and say, you're going the wrong direction here. Folks, when we were in the hospital there with Sister Maxine two or three weeks ago, the world will never understand about us trusting the Lord. And you know what? We should not expect them to understand. When what they expect from someone that comes through the hospital door is that you're saying, I give myself to you. You do whatever you need to do to make me be better when I go back out again. So they're not going to be able to understand whenever we say, you know, what I came for was I thought maybe my leg was broken to where it could be set and I would go home again. But it's not going to be that way. So I desire that you send me back home again. You know, we should not expect the world to understand our desire to trust God. But the same way with those circling Dothan, there's also God's Spirit surrounds us in our time of trouble. But you know what we need to do? We need the Lord to help our eyesight. Because it's easy for me to see the trouble. The devil would love for me to see the trouble and not to see what God is able to do. I'd like to look at a place over in 2 Samuel. You know, a lot of times when we'll talk about David and Goliath, but we don't hardly ever talk about this story right here. And this was a pretty big account. 1 Samuel in the 13th chapter. Look at the condition that the children of Israel had gotten themselves into in 1 Samuel 13 and 19. The Philistines had taken control of Israel to this point. 19th verse, there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel. The Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make themselves swords or spears. You know, they were not even able to make a weapon to defend themselves. The Philistines were in control. It says the Philistines went down, the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share, his coulter, his axe, his mattock. Yet they had a file for mattocks. So I look at this story right here. How are you going to expect to be able to win any kind of battle when you'd hardly even have a weapon? You don't have them to go fight with. But I look at this story starting in the 14th chapter and in the 6th verse. You know, we read about David and his victories. We don't hardly hear too much about Jonathan. But look at this story with Jonathan. They said they only had two swords, one for Jonathan, one for Saul. And the Philistines have come up against them again. You know how easy it'd be to say, we're outnumbered. Don't even try. And Satan would like to say the same thing about us today. Don't even give it a try. You're outnumbered. But when I look at this story, he said in the sixth verse, Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor. Now, you know, it's amazing that you could have a young man willing to go with you when you have no more of a weapon than that. But he says to the young man that bare his armor, come, let us go over into the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us. There is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. Can you imagine one person going up against the camp of the Philistines, one sword and an armor bearer that's coming along with him? And God gave them a great deliverance. In fact, it goes on down. See, a lot of times I find in these stories, God could do it all by himself, but he takes the individual and then God multiplies the help. Jonathan by himself could not have conquered the victory totally. But what he did by realizing, you know what, God can save us by few or by many, he was willing to put himself out and trust God for it. And when God gave him that little victory, then God stepped in. And what does it say in the 13th verse? Jonathan climbed up on his hands and upon his feet, and the armor bearer after him, and they fell before Jonathan and his armor bearer. They fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer slew after him. Well, you know, that's only about 20 people that got killed there. But it did something, and here's where God steps in when we do our part. 15th verse says, there was a trembling in the host, in the field, and among all the people. The garrison and the spoilers, they also trembled. The earth quaked so that it was a very great trembling. You know, God stepped in with a small amount that Jonathan was able to do, but his confidence was in God. God stepped in and gave them the victory. Proverbs 3 and 5 and 6. Because my human reasoning can come in and say, there's no way to win this battle that I'm facing. It's not by myself. But with God, all things are possible. Proverbs 3 and 5 and 6, trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Don't lean to your own understanding. My own understanding is, you remember where it said, if you have 10,000 and you're going out against somebody that you recognize now to be 20,000, here's what a normal person would do. They would send out, what can we do to make peace? There's no need to make this kind of a battle. But you know what? With God, it's totally different. When David was met up with Goliath, you remember he had only planned to take some cheese and some bread to his brothers. He didn't have any plan that I'm going to help win this battle. But when he got there and he heard Goliath and what he had to say, and then when he watched the men of Israel and how they fled just from what they heard, something rose up in David. Was it that he said, I tell you what, I am good with a rock? No, what he recognized is, wait a minute, this is God that he's defying. God can help here. And you remember where David, his brothers would not even give him much credit. You're naughty. You just came down here to see this. Well, I imagine he would be embarrassed. That's his older brothers, and they've just been running. He had to catch up with them with the cheese, probably. But when you look at that, and they're not happy with him, but he steps on past that, and he says, is there not a cause? There's a cause here. And folks, that's where we are today. There's a cause, and it's bigger than I am. We are safe to put our hand in God's. I believe today he still wants to work among us just like he did back then. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he'll direct your paths. Because you know what? If David would have sat down and said, wait a minute, this man is twice my height. He is experienced. There's no way I can go against him. But you know what? What David recognized was God is able to take care of this. And David already had some experience with a lion and a bear. And he took that experience and he didn't even put the credit to himself. I could strike at something at a distance and hit it dead on every time. No, what he's recognizing is, you know what? God can help me with that. You remember when Saul says, I want to help you. Here, I've got this armor for you to wear. That's what people do when they go into battle. Now, I don't know how tall David was, but you know one of the things that credited Saul when he was anointed to be king? He was head and shoulders over everybody else. That meant his armor was head and shoulders taller than everybody else. But he's wanting David to wear this. Tell you what, you'll be protected if you'll wear this. Yes, you will. You'll hardly be able to walk around, though. But what he saw was, you remember, he went ahead and put it on. And then he said, nope, I haven't tried this. I'm going to do what works. You know, we have all, in the past, been able to find some things that work. And it'll continue to work in the future. One of them is in my trouble, I need to get down real low before the Lord. In fact, that may be why these troubles come to us, come to me. Because he really wants me to see myself like I really have been all alone. You know, it takes us getting into some difficult places to be able to really recognize that. I would never do what King Nebuchadnezzar did, walking on his porch and talking about what a great thing I have been able to develop in my temporal things and all. I wouldn't do that. But you know, the devil would like for us to have a higher opinion of myself. What does it say? Everyone who is among you, not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think. How highly does the Lord want us to think of ourselves? He wants us to remember what Jesus said, without me, you can do nothing. And that's where I need to live my life. But at the same time, what is easy for me to do is say, okay, I'll take that. I can do nothing. And that's what I felt at the time that the Lord called me for this. You know what? He wants us to stay in that place. But then Paul was able to say, I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. I think the Lord wants all of us to be able to do that, get down real low before him, and then to realize, you know what? This is not the end of it. This is just the beginning of it. Now I'm in the place for God to be able to work. You remember where it says, it was true then and it's true today. The Lord said, my glory I will not share with another. So his desire is, I want to bring something in your life that when it's ended, there'll be nothing but glory coming back to the Lord. And a lot of times that happens by us coming into a place where there's not a thing I can do about this. It's going to be failure if the Lord doesn't reach in. And yet he's willing to do that. So with David and the victory that he had, you know, it seemed like his confidence level would have always stayed very high. I don't need anything but God. But you know, there came a time where, and I don't know how many years later it was, David decided that he needed to number Israel. Why? Why didn't David back there when Goliath was roaring, why didn't David say, stop, okay, I want to number Israel? He couldn't. They're running. Nor did he care about numbering them at that time. They were going to be of no help if he knew how many there were, because this wasn't the first time they had run. It had been going on for 40 days, I believe, up until now. This is just the next exercise. And he happens to come in on it, and he realizes this thing isn't about how many we have. Just like Jonathan said, God's able to deliver us by many or by few. It doesn't matter. We just need God involved in it. But then there came this time where, you know, it seems like trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Don't lean to your own understanding. It only seems like the right thing to do to know how many soldiers I have, because I can tell how many are coming. But you know, that wasn't God's plan, nor was he pleased with it. You know, I don't think he's pleased today for me to say, wonder what resources I have available. You know, and I'm not talking about money, I'm talking about mentally, emotionally, to be able to go through these kind of problems. Instead, that I totally rely on the Lord, because the Lord is interested, he was then and he is today, that it all comes back to all glory goes to God. So he was not pleased when David numbered Israel, because he wanted David to know, David, if it's you by yourself, you can still have the victory. I'm still the same God as before. There was another place that he saw. His eyes saw Gideon. At a time when the Midianites had kind of devastated the country there, I think he was hiding out trying to harvest a little bit of grain so they could live. And the Lord comes to him and says, the angel comes to him and starts talking to him and giving him some direction, going to help you out with this battle. Well, what would you want? You would want the most people that you could get. We already know how many of the enemy it was. I believe it was 135,000. So I'd like to match that. He only had 32,000 when he got them all together. That's like 5 to 1. And God says, you got too many. You know, if you had 32,000 here and you had 135,000 here and they're looking at each other, the kind of fear you would have when you recognize how small you are compared to them, God takes a look at it and he says, Gideon, you got too many. Here's how we're going to take care of it. If you're scared, go home. A bunch of them cut out. 22,000 of them went home. And I look at that story, the battle hadn't even started yet. You know, they will have these victory marches when the battle's over and they've won and they're coming home. Well, these 22,000 don't have a scar on them and they're coming home. And I can see their wives. Oh, this is wonderful. I was afraid. I understood it was a large difference of people. I was so afraid you may never even make it home. I am so glad that y'all won this battle. I don't even see a scratch on you, so it couldn't have been bad. Well, it said if we're scared, go home, so we're here. You know, and they're down to 10,000 people against 135,000. And God says, you got too many. You know, he could have said, okay, the next step is like David, we need to find who can throw a rock the straightest. You remember how it said David had some mighty men. They could do this and within a hair's breadth. That's some good throwing right there. So is that what God, remember, don't lean to your own understanding, because God's the one to do the working. So Gideon could have been thinking, okay, wonder how God wants to do this next one here. We do that sometimes in our head. I wonder what's the next step that God's going to make. And so God says, I need y'all to go down and drink water at the brook. And if you drink it this way, you go home. He didn't tell them that. It was at the end of it. Okay, everybody that has drunk water this way, go home. What difference does it make how you drink water? You know, God's ways are not our ways. He said, my thoughts are not your thoughts. My ways are not your ways. You know, sometimes because technology has improved so much, our thinking tries to improve along with it. And yet we still serve the same God. The same God that can look at a situation and say, I'm going to do it with a simple thing here. If you drink water this way, go home. How many went home? 9,700. They come home. Here comes another group. Not a scratch on them. Well, now what's the story? Well, we drank some water and they said, you didn't drink it right. Go home. You know, there's not going to be much understanding coming from those around. But now God says you've got 300 people just right. 300 against 135,000. And now it's time for weapons. You know, in each of these things, Gideon could have thought, okay, we're down to 300 people. We got to at least have the best weapons we can. And what did the Lord tell him? Get your lamp, get you a pitcher, get you a trumpet, and you're ready for battle. Folks, I look at that story, and when they agreed to it and followed God's plan, God took care of the rest. I find that in so many of the stories, Jehoshaphat, he feared when he saw the great company coming against him. A great company of enemy coming. He feared, and then he set himself to seek the Lord. And then whenever it came time for the battle, he sent singers out to praise the beauty of holiness. Folks, I think that's where we are today. With all the technology and everything the way it is, that I would still go back to these kind of stories. God has a track record. He even kind of tells us time after time how to do it. When Joshua had his first battle as commander for the Israelites, coming up against Jericho, how am I going to take it? I need my men to be able to recognize me as a leader, so I need to be able to do it right. So he gets the message from the Lord, here's how you do it. And then he passes that message down to the men. What was it? Walk around the city one time every day for 6 days and don't say a word. I believe I understand why he said don't say a word. Because on about day two, somebody would start, I don't understand how this is going to do any good. This is day three, day four, day five, and nothing has happened. You know, after a while, the people up on the wall, they're not even much concerned. Okay, come and watch. There, fits and get some more exercise going around this thing. What they were doing was obeying God. And I find, you know, I should have learned this back when I was a child and Mom and Dad was reading me the Bible stories. I should have caught this thread that runs through all of it. God's ways are not my ways. His thoughts are not my thoughts. They're higher than mine. And what he will do is take some simple things to be able to prove that, you know what, you don't have to have something great to be able to win the battle. You only need to humble down yourself and have God fight the battle for you. It's available for us today. And I want to be able to have it in my life. God has a track record. And his desire is that we would put our hand in his, so he can add to that list. You remember it says, we're compassed about by a great cloud of witnesses. Folks who have gone through this before us and had victory. And every one of those victories came only because God brought them through to the other side. It would not be anyone to be able to say, let me tell you what I was able to do to win it. You know, in that great cloud of witnesses, we have people, every one of us, can probably think of a few ourselves that were faithful people that put their hand in God's. One to me is Aunt Nelda. You will have your own. But I think of her and how she put her hand in God's and let him do with her whatever he wanted to do. I think I'll always remember this summer meeting a few years ago. She was preparing for it. She could not get around except in her electric wheelchair. So she had gone out shopping the day before getting some groceries so that she would be able to be, she loved to be in every service. If she went to Monarch, it was get up for early morning prayer meeting, go back and rest a little bit, be in morning service, afternoon service, night service. And she had her desire to do that at this meeting. And as she pulled into her garage and driving her buggy out off the ramp, she was carrying her bags of groceries and something fell forward and hit the joystick and put it wide open and ran her into the wall and broke both legs. And she spent the meeting laying in the bed with her confidence in God. I would be in, you know, she was not saying, God, why did you do this to me? You know that song we sing, I believe it's number 55, and I just let my God his dear purpose fulfill. You know, that's where peace comes, the true peace comes from that Jesus said, I'll give you. My peace I give, not as the world giveth, give I unto you. And this is where that peace comes from. It's I just let my God his dear purpose fulfill. What comes into my life tomorrow, I don't have to understand it. I don't know how it's going to end up, how it's going to work. But I know it will work for my good, and I can make heaven my home if I will go through it the right way. So maybe it would be good for us as we go through life to go back to the Bible story book again. The stories were made so simple, and yet they had a common thread running through them. I heard them as a child, but I've got a lot of thoughts now that can run through my mind of how things ought to turn out, how they ought to do. But I believe I need to go back and just put my hand in God's and say, I want you to work out your purpose in my life. Our biggest goal is, I want to go to heaven. To do that, I would love to be able to do it by every day being a wonderful day. And then I have no pain and I step over into heaven. But you know what? Somehow it does not seem that it works that way very often. I find that affliction, remember that verse said it was good for me that I'd been afflicted. I don't think that necessarily just means sickness. It just means trouble that comes into my life. Because you know what, really, those are the ones that drive us closer to the Lord than the sunshiny days. Everybody can have the victory on a sunshine day. I have no troubles in my life. But for me to be able to put my hand in the Lord's on those troubled days and to recognize, you know what, he's got a track record. As thou hast been, thou forever shalt be. We're going to all go our separate ways again. We'll be taking these requests all home with us, praying for those serious needs. But you know what? In this next year, we're going to have some more to add to them. We'll have some that get taken off of them. But may we remember God's track record. As thou hast been, thou forever shalt be. How has that been? Faithful to us. He will take every one of us to heaven if we will yield to him. There's a song that I've heard in the past. It says, there is no night, for in his light you'll never walk alone. You'll always feel at home wherever you may roam. There is no power can conquer you while God is on your side. Take him at his promise. Don't run away and hide. It is no secret what God can do. What he's done for others, he'll do for you. With arms wide open, he'll pardon you. First of all, to pardon me from sin, with arms wide open, he'll walk with me through these places that can happen in our life. It is no secret what God can do. May we all, in these days out ahead, let's look back at the track record that God has. He has been faithful, and he will continue to be faithful. All I need to do is humble myself before him. What is it? He has showed thee, O man, what is good. What doth the Lord require of thee but to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with thy God? May God help us each one to make heaven our home. Amen.